All that we regularly take for granted has, in the midst of closure and crisis, coronavirus and quarantine, become clearer with time. Assumptions that we might have made about our health and livelihood, family and friends, region and country are being called into question and are suddenly subject to our reappraisal. Maybe these prompts can invite us to a kind of divine interrogation. We may feel freer to dispense with the non-essentials in our lives and grow more invested in preserving the essentials. Now that we have entered our second month of the shelter-in-place order in Massachusetts, things that were fixtures in our landscape no longer feel as secure. We may worry about them fading from our memory or even disappearing altogether before we are able to return to them, those restaurants and practices and shops and businesses. We are concerned for the survival of so much these days. So it might seem like a relatively minor point that certain words have lately fallen into disuse, but I do not believe it is, and I am not alone in that belief. In his book, Learning to Speak God from Scratch, Why Sacred Words Are Vanishing and How We Can Reclaim Them, religious writer Jonathan Merritt notes that sacred speech and spiritual conversation are in decline, sadly, and have been for a while now. An analysis Merritt conducted of public rhetoric that calls from collected books, newspapers, web pages, and speeches shows that most religious and spiritual words have been declining in the English-speaking word since the early 20th century. He observes that language about the virtues, words like love, patience, gentleness, faithfulness, have become rarer too, with the humility words like modesty, compassion words like kindness, and gratitude words like thankfulness all declining in common usage by approximately 50%. A survey he did of Americans found that more than a fifth of those surveyed had not had any spiritual conversations in the course of the past year, while three-fifths had had spiritual conversations on very rare occasions, which meant that less than a fifth had regular conversations about spiritual matters. The problem with these trends is that what we name, we notice, and what we notice, we name. Nowadays, we sometimes do neither. Although religious speech might not be a language in the formal sense, it functions like one, Merritt contends. Because of this, it is in danger of becoming a dead language. When the world loses a language, it loses a lot. It loses a particular vocabulary, a unique grammatical structure, and a special fluency that a group of people share in community. You might call us homo verba, Merritt declares. We are word-shaped beings who live word-shaped lives within word-shaped communities. Without those words, we lose the ability to communicate meaningfully with one another. As Merritt suggests, faith would not exist, it cannot exist, without words. They are the way religion produces progeny. Someone spoke and a spirit lifted. Do you remember the words that stirred your spirit to this degree? A few of you have shared with me the words that spoke to you most powerfully. They might have been lines from a sermon or a favorite hymn or a communal prayer. Whenever you heard them, they announced your arrival in this community. Words have such tremendous power to move us and make claims on us. I tend to feel suspicious of people who are dismissive of words themselves, people who dismiss things as just talk, because it seems to me they have not yet developed an ear for sacred speech and spiritual conversation. In his book, Merritt rightly points out that any dying language can be revived by those who insist on speaking it. We must work together to rekindle confidence in the vocabulary of faith, Merritt argues. I agree wholeheartedly. While our liberal religious tradition has long rejected any creedal tests of personal belief, Unitarian Universalism remains strongly identified as a covenantal faith that is vocal about the good that it will affirm. Our call to worship today, that meditation by the Reverend Susan Menker Seal titled Out of Our Yearning, is a contemporary adaptation of a well-known Universalist bond of union that was popular in the last century. You may be familiar with it. Love is the doctrine of this church, and the quest for truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve human need, to the end that all souls shall grow into harmony with the divine. Thus do we covenant with one another and with God. Written by the late minister L. Griswold Williams, it articulates a divine lexicon that enshrines love and truth and service and seeking and growing and harmony as part and parcel of our collective religious pursuit, a pursuit that is open always to all souls. Even people who are uncomfortable with God language have felt kindly inclined toward this vision. Early on during the coronavirus outbreak, an old friend of mine, a UU minister who now serves as a hospital chaplain out west, began posting a painting on social media each day as an exercise called Visio Divina, which is a Latin term for divine vision. On a daily basis, he invites everyone to contemplate the scene depicted and consider where they glimpse the presence of the sacred. Tellingly, the pictures vary greatly. Some are lovely and bucolic, while others appear desolate and grim. What my friend presumes, of course, is that the sacred is present always and can be spied by all of our eyes if we open them wide enough. More recently, he has made public his heartbreaking accounts of COVID-19 patients dying in his hospital in isolation. In each of these accounts, it is obvious that the spiritual significance of the encounters with people in extremis near the very end of their lives, people I know my friend counts as beloved children of God, is never lost on him. As the death toll in America continues to climb to nearly 40,000, we are grasping the magnitude of the loss we are all facing here. It will ask us to marshal our personal resources in making sense of it somehow. Over the past few weeks, I've come to appreciate this online Visio Divina as an important extension of my friend's chaplaincy, one in which he invites us all into more substantive engagement than we are used to in our social media channels. He asks us to type up our own observations of the scene into the comment box. He encourages us to find the words to describe it. He is asking us to practice sacred speech and engage spiritual conversation day in and day out through this crisis, and it has become a special discipline of mine. Not only is my friend building our shared vocabulary, he is expanding our religious imagination. Every day, he is asking us to notice and name and notice the divine. Every day, I find, I welcome that opportunity. In his book, Learning to Speak God from Scratch, Merritt quotes at length a bold contemporary translation of the famous prologue from the Gospel of John. This translation breathes new life into it. It all arose out of a conversation within God. In fact, the conversation was God. So God started the discussion, and everything came out of this, and nothing happened without consultation. This was the life that was the light shining in the darkness, a darkness which neither understood nor quenched its creativity. Children were born out of sharing in the creative activity of God. They heard the conversation still going on here, now, and took part, discovering a new way of being a people. To be invited to share in a conversation about the nature of life was for them a glorious opportunity not to be missed. Any opportunity we are given these days to expand our divine lexicon seems to me one we ought to seize. Here at UU Wellesley Hills, we have these opportunities in our midweek reflection and in our touchstone groups and in all the other connections we are forging now. The yearnings we feel, the fears that plague us, the regrets we have, the loves we have known, the hardships we face, the hopes we yet harbor, all of these things belong in our ongoing conversation and all communicate important notions of the holy. I want us to reclaim religious language so that we can be in honest, intimate consultation with one another. That question the psalmist so poignantly poses will, for some of us, take on a special urgency now. Where is your God? Where is your God? The answer saints, sages, and even saviors have given us are always the same, very near. Near. Near to our experiences and dilemmas and joys and sorrows and confusions, that divine presence may be within us or between us or around us, but it remains amidst the greatest uncertainties of our lives. This current pandemic presents us with a pivotal moment in history when we are asked to consider what commands our allegiances, what represents our ultimate concerns, what binds us to one another in the human family. These are all religious questions, of course. They deserve religious responses from us. The more fluent we become in sacred speech and spiritual conversation, the better we can provide them for ourselves and for others. Grant us wisdom, grant us courage, we sing, for the living of these days. Grant us wisdom, grant us courage. Eyes to see and ears to hear. Let us open our eyes. Let us open our ears. Let us open our hearts to wisdom. As people of faith, we can stay well versed in what abides and endures. When we break our polite and conditioned silences, we may hear ourselves speaking some forgotten but still eternal truths, ones we very much need to hear today.